This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Voters and politicians have been wrestling with the question of how their faith should affect their public decisions. This is the question that Cardinal Theodore McCarrick has been examining as the head of the Task Force on Catholic Bishops and Catholic Politicians. In its interim report to the Conference of Bishops in Denver last June, the task force looked at the issue of whether politicians who support legal abortion should receive communion. McCarrick has been the Archbishop of Washington, D.C. since January of 2002. 7 weeks after he was installed, he was elevated to the College of Cardinals by the Pope. I asked Cardinal McCarrick to explain where the Church now stands on the issue of pro-choice Catholic politicians and communion.
Well, I think the decision that was made in Denver was a very prudent one. I think we said that a bishop in his own diocese, aware of the situation in his own diocese and aware of the pastoral needs in his own diocese, could make that decision as he determined it was the best to do. I think it was important that the bishops themselves said that it was not the basic teaching of the Church that a man would have to be denied communion at the altar rail, nor was it the decision of the Church that a bishop who decided to do that for pastoral reasons would not be in keeping with Church policy. In other words, you could decide in a diocese that communion should be denied. You could decide in your own diocese that communion should not be denied.
So how is it working out? Are many bishops refusing to give communion to politicians who have supported the right to abortion?
Terry, I think not. I think the vast majority of the bishops decided that a confrontation at the altar rail was not what they felt was necessary in their own diocese. And the Holy See indicated in a letter to me that this position was very much in harmony with Church teaching. Not to say that another position would not be, but basically the Holy See made it clear that a bishop was not obliged to deny communion. It also made it clear, to expand just a little on your question, it also made it clear that a person who voted for a politician in office who was not in communion with the teaching of the Church would not, by that very fact, be denied communion unless the person did it precisely because the person was against, was, say, anti-life or against something that was very much a teaching of the Church. In other words, so often as men and women look at who they're going to vote for, if a person would decide to vote for a candidate who was anti-life, who was pro-abortion, but do it for other reasons, for other grave reasons, such as the stand on poverty, on war, on something like that, that person should not be refused communion. The Cardinal Ratzinger made that very clear in a letter to me.
Do the bishops think that if somebody votes for a political candidate who supports abortion, or if a political candidate, him or herself, supports abortion, that they should simply not ask for communion, that they should simply not approach for communion?
I'd have to divide your question. I think in the second case, I think that the Church would say that someone who votes for someone who supports abortion, not because that person supports abortion, but for other reasons,
right,
that person should not be denied communion because of that. However, the question about someone, a politician who himself or herself supports abortion, that person, I think we would say they probably should not approach the communion rail because they are really not in communion with the teaching of the Church.
Let me ask you, I know the Pope has expressed his opposition to the war in Iraq, and many Americans believe that this is a war that should not have begun in the first place.
Exactly.
So when deciding, for instance, in the past presidential election who to vote for, I mean, what's the priority? Is it a war that the Pope opposes, or is it abortion? Because, you know, one candidate favored the war and initiated the war. That would be President Bush. But he's anti-abortion. But the other candidate who thinks that this war was a mistake also supports a woman's right to have an abortion. So, you know, how do you weigh war versus abortion?
Well, this is precisely the reason that that we say that for a person to be denied communion, a voter to be denied communion, they would have to be voting for the pro-abortion position, pro-abortion legislator, precisely because that was his stand. If they were voting for that person because of other grave reasons, such as perhaps the possibility because that they were opposed to that person because of his or her view on war, then that could be presumably considered a grave reason, in Colin Ratzinger's words, that person should not be denied communion.
Why are abortion and euthanasia considered the most important moral issues by the church, as opposed to war or capital punishment, which also involve life and death?
Of course, there's no question about that. However, you know, I think it's really very simple. All those other human rights, the human right to dignity, the human right to health, the human right to live in peace, all those other human rights depend on the right to be alive. And if you're not alive, then those other rights really become, in a certain sense, secondary. Not that they're not important, but that it is only those people who are alive who can exercise those human rights. And if you are saying that you don't have a right to live, then of course you're not only attacking the right to live, but you're attacking all those other rights, because the person who is not living has no access to those rights of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Regarding a politician who supports a woman's option to have an abortion, whether they should get communion or not, you have said, "We should have no confrontation at the altar. I'm not going to have a fight with someone holding the sacred body and blood in my hand." You've also said the battles for human life and dignity and for the weak and vulnerable should be fought not at the communion rail, but in the public square. So how have you handled this question about offering communion to politicians who supported abortion?
Basically, in my own pastoral practice and here in the Archdiocese of Washington, we do it in three ways. First of all, we want to teach very clearly about what we believe is the evil of abortion. We want to teach very clearly about what we believe is the right to life, the right to human life. And then we also want to teach very clearly about the necessity of fighting for the dignity of the human person. That's the other thing that the Holy Father has spoken of so very often and so very beautifully. Because of this, the complex nature of all this, in this archdiocese, we have not denied communion to anybody. There's another difficulty there. In the Archdiocese of Washington, as probably in every diocese in the country, many times the Holy Communion is being administered by lay people, and it's certainly unfair to say to an extraordinary minister of communion, you have to make a judgment on who to give communion to or not. So that not only would I believe that it is not the right thing to do, I believe that it would almost be impossible to enforce such a practice.
Mm-hmm. Let me quote something else you said. You said, this was last June, you said, "We are deeply disturbed and offended by politicians who claim to be Catholic, who vote in contradiction to Catholic teaching fundamentally on the defense of unborn life, but also on other threats to human life and dignity. When Catholics deny fundamental moral principles which come from natural law itself, or insist their faith has no role in their public choices, we as bishops are challenged to find more effective ways to make sure that their choices in public life should reflect the deepest moral convictions." What do you mean by more effective ways?
Well, I think we always have to be open to dialogue. And I think that has been something that maybe many of us, myself included, have not been that good at. It seems to me that we have to be the clear teachers. We have to be the ones who are always willing to dialogue and who are always willing to express what we believe. Sometimes we take for granted that people in politics understand all these things, and we could very easily be wrong in many cases. So that our first obligation as bishops is to be the teachers of our people, and to be willing to go back time and time and time again to make sure that in dialogue people know where we stand and why we stand for what we stand for. And I think that is maybe that is part of our fault, that we have not taught as consistently, as clearly, and as constantly as we should.
My guest is Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. He heads the Task Force on Catholic Bishops and Catholic Politicians. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, Archbishop of Washington, D.C., and head of the Task Force on Catholic Bishops and Catholic Politicians. Religion and moral values played such a large part in the presidential election and in other elections as well last month. I'm wondering where do you think the line is between church and state, and if you feel that line has been shifting at all?
Well, I'm smiling about that because very often we have been saying in the past that the line had shifted against religion, and I think now maybe we're bringing it back into a balance where it should be. I've often felt that our Constitution has maybe been interpreted in ways that the Founding Fathers did not intend. To the best of my knowledge, they were opposing any establishment of religion, of any particular religion, or of religion in general. They were not saying that you could not use religious institutions to help your people, to serve your people. And I'm afraid that what has happened in our country, unfortunately, is that we have almost established non-religion as the religion of our country. We've almost established secularism, a denial of religious values, so that any time anybody would come with a religious value, we would say, oh, that's unconstitutional. Well, I don't find that anywhere in the Constitution. And therefore, I think it is good that now we are bringing back into balance the teaching of the Constitution and the mind of our Founding Fathers.
You know the expression, the religious right. Do you think that the Catholic Church is part of what is called the religious right?
Well, I think the Catholic Church has been very blessed in having representatives of the religious right, the religious left, and the religious center. And I think that to try to characterize our church as on one side or the other is probably not accurate. I was a sociologist years ago, at least I was supposed to be, and I learned that there are so many different opinions. The Romans had a great expression, as many people, as many opinions, so that everybody has their own outlook. And their outlook changes depending on issues sometimes and depending on personalities. So I don't see the Catholic Church being part of the religious right or part of the religious left. I think I try to be part of the religious center so that I can touch both ends and the middle as well.
I know that some critics of the Church's point of view think that by making abortion the number one issue, that the church is almost saying, well, support Republicans. That's what some critics of the church's point of view say. And now I'll quote Andrew Sullivan. He said in a column that this is the religious right's dream, to destroy the Catholic base of the Democratic Party, create a hard right rump of true believers, and integrate the latter in the GOP. But it shouldn't be the church's mission to foster this scheme. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it should never be the church's mission to establish a political position on anything. I think it should be the church's mission to get the people to know what we teach and to get the people to make their own judgments on how that teaching should be placed into reality in our society. It seems to me that for the Catholic Church to be marginalized on any side is not reality and is not going to happen, because I think that our people are wise enough and thoughtful enough and faithful enough to look at all the things that different political parties espouse and to make their judgments on what might be the closest to where they feel the church and in our nation should move.
Do you feel that this is hurting, that the church's stand and the debate that it had about whether politicians who support a woman's option to have an abortion should get communion, do you feel that this whole debate has actually served to hurt Catholic politicians, because there's always been a fear that some Americans had that Catholic politicians would be, quote, getting their marching orders from the Pope, that they'd be taking direction from the church. You know, John F. Kennedy had to work hard to fight that stereotype when he was elected.
Well, I certainly remember Kennedy's talk in Houston, where he acknowledged his political independence. But it seems to me that if this were true, that the Catholic Church was being so marginalized on one party or another, it would be a shame. But I'm not sure that's true. Even the statistics that we have now seem to indicate that there's a large percentage of Catholic votes on both party side, and that sort of changes from time to time. However, it is certainly true that we begin with the question of life, and because you as I said before, and I think it's unfortunately for some political situations true, but it is absolutely true that you can't have any other rights unless you're alive, and so that right has to be primordial. It has to be the essential stand that we have to take.
The Catholic Church also doesn't believe in divorce or in birth control. Is there reason to expect that at some point the church might exert more pressure on Catholic politicians to oppose divorce or to oppose birth control?
Well, I think you have to make different judgments on different issues. With regard to divorce, well, we certainly appreciate that divorce has become a major concern in our society. A concern, I say, because it has affected the stability of married life in our country, as it has so much in so much part of the world. Now, I don't think any of us are going to take on that question, except that we are going to say, as we do, that the marriage is between one man and one woman, and it is a sacrament, and it is something which is essential to the life of our society. That we believe that society and civilization, at least as we know it here in this country, is based on marriage, on family, and therefore anything that is going to be an attack on marriage and family is going to make it difficult for people to find happiness.
Does that include birth control?
Yeah, well, I think it. I would say it does. My position is this. You know, when the Holy Father Pope Paul VI wrote his encyclical letter Humanae Vitae, which said that contraception was a great danger in our society, and certainly against the teaching of the Catholic Church, a lot of people said, "Oh, you're crazy! It's contraception is going to cut down on problems in families. Contraception is going to cut down on the difficulties that face men and women." Well, I think unfortunately the opposite has been true. Contraception has opened the door to using sex for pleasure, and without the real need to make sure that sexual life is included in the way we live, with the understanding that there are responsibilities, that like everything else in life, sexual activity has to fall within the realm of responsibility.
Cardinal, I know our time is up and that you need to leave, but just one very quick question: do you think that the sex abuse scandals have in the eyes of Catholics compromised the church's ability to take a moral stand on birth control or on sex?
I think certainly the great difficulty, this great sorrow, this very sad chapter in the history of the Church of the United States that is represented by the scandal of sex abuse of minors, wherein the Church certainly suffered, and wherein I must say I believe that there is probably no other institution in the in our country that has worked so diligently and with so much pain to make sure that, that this will never happen again as the Catholic Church has, because I think we have achieved. I'm not happy about it because it means we had to achieve it, but I am happy about it to the extent that we have achieved it, that children are now as safe as they can possibly be in the Catholic Church. Now, having said that, I think that sure, during this very difficult period, the Church has suffered and the bishops have suffered in credibility. I would hope that now that we've been able to get this, please God, under control, as I truly believe we have, I think that hopefully that credibility will be restored.
Well, Cardinal, I know you need to leave for another appointment, so let me wish you a very early Merry Christmas.
And I wish you the same, Terry. Thank you for letting me have a chance to talk to you and to those who listen.
Cardinal Theodore McCarrick is the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., and head of the Task Force on Catholic Bishops and Catholic Politicians. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.